I realized, oh shit, like I have to do this. If you take the conservative choice, if you take the safe choice, you can also fail. So because you can fail at something that you don't like, you might as well just take the chance to do something that you like. He chose from his valuable time to sit down with me 1.5 hours. Who am I? Who am I to deserve that? I really had that moment of like, oh, he is on my podcast? Like, how did that happen?
I think passion sees passion.
Also, thank you so much, because it was a huge compliment. And then conversations like that actually make me realize, oh shit, it just takes me back to the moment of, it makes me realize how amazing this community is.
How are you, Robin?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you so much for joining me. So much has changed since I've been on your show last time. It feels like just yesterday, but I couldn't wait to speak to you again. We just had such a great conversation. You know, learn about your journey this time and find out a little more about just growing up, how that shaped you and how you got into this, like how you found out about Bitcoin. You're doing so many podcasts, you're sharing so many perspectives, you've spoken to some really big influential people in the space, and that's super inspiring. You're going to be speaking at the Bitcoin conference in Vegas, but you've done other conferences, you've done Prague. So today I want to start off with growing up in Austria, how it was growing up, how, like, tell us a little bit about yourself, how it was living out there and stuff, because I'm in America, so.
I cannot compare it to America, unfortunately. I would love to, but because I've never grown up myself in America. Maybe it would be interesting to really like compare how it is in America and what kind of mindsets you get. I hear there's like the lemonade stand, and the selling is actually something that gets taught a lot more in America, and this mindset barriers. In Austria, I grew up as a savings kid, actually. Like, I learned to save a lot growing up. It's not normal in Austria, so it's just to me. But overall, I had a very good childhood. Like, I had an amazing childhood where I grew up on a farm. I grew up on very nice terms. I didn't play a lot of video games. I played a lot outside. I touched a lot of grass. that meme was definitely me. So I had an amazing childhood, and I unfortunately don't have a great childhood story where I had like some trauma that I overcame or something like that. I cannot say that. My parents brought me up very nicely in a protected environment, not too rich, not too poor, somewhere in the middle. Quite normal and quite boring, actually.
Well, that's actually really nice, because that shows you that growing up on a farm and being feeling like you're in the middle and not feeling like you're suffering the hardships of not having enough and having too much can spoil you. So it keeps you grounded the way you grow up, and being in a smaller community and, you know, being able to be creative and be outside and play instead of, you know, feeling like you're in a big city, that would be a totally different upbringing. Do you have any siblings?
Yes, I have one sister. She's awesome. She's 2 years younger than me, so she's my little sister. Yeah, it was really great. Austria is like, whole of Europe has one big advantage and one big disadvantage. The advantage is it's so beautiful. I travel a lot around the world. You said like with the conferences, I was in Miami. I will be soon in Vegas. I was in Abu Dhabi, I was in Prague, I was in El Salvador. And the more I travel around, the more I realized how beautiful Austria, how beautiful Europe is, how rich the culture is. But then the big disadvantage is we have high taxes, or politicians don't get. Can I just talk today, actually, with another German podcaster who said there's grassroots movement, and there is how big is the adoption for on the political level. And the difference between grassroots movement and the political level is nowhere as big as it is in Austria. In Austria, we have all the grassroots movement. Germany, actually. Germany, we have so many full node operators. We have so many people that actually run their own nodes, the mining things. We have so many great things going on. Like the meetup space in Germany is also really, really great. But the politicians don't get it. So that the difference between grassroots movement and what the political level thinks of Bitcoin is very big in Europe and in Germany in particular. And I think in America, actually, now the political level is more and more waking up to Bitcoin, but also the grassroots movement is really good. So like there's not a huge difference. There is a difference, but not a huge difference. So growing up, obviously as a kid, you love it. Like there's a lot of playgrounds, there are rivers. I was every day in a forest, and I had all sicknesses combined with a forest because I was every day there. We make like wooden houses, we make things in the forest. I had that typical childhood, but then also you get the disadvantages with that, unfortunately. So it would be awesome if Austria had low taxes, low bureaucracy, but and high Bitcoin adoption, but it is unfortunately not like that.
Yeah, the bureaucracy, kind of, you see that all over, and we all wish there was higher Bitcoin adoption. I can relate to the forest as a kid. I grew up in a suburb, and I used to climb trees all the time and, you know, pretend that we were looking out for, you know, bad guys and just kind of pretending a lot. And I loved climbing trees. So I relate to that sort of a childhood. It was a quiet neighborhood, but we definitely had a lot of nature around us. So were your parents farmers?
No, but my grandparents were. But my parents, basically my mom is had a lot of jobs in her life. Currently she's working not as a nurse, but like something similar. I don't know the English word actually for that, but she's helping doctors. And my dad founded companies and worked in sales and did some manager jobs. So he's been around in a lot of different ways. So it's quite the middle ground of how people can live up, not very rich, not very poor, somewhere in the middle, as I said. And this is how I grew up. But I said I grew up on a farm because my granddad actually lived just like 500 meters from us, like really close. And there was a big farm with cows, with horses, with pigs, with everything you want to wish in a farm, with tractors. It's just such a beautiful playground for kids because you can literally run around, you can play hide and seek with other kids. And the cool thing is also you can actually experience life in a different way. I got to do the farming work with my granddad every single day. I was coming home, quickly do my homework, and just running to my granddad and just doing the farming work. So that was really important for me in the childhood.
Yeah, it's like you get to spend time with him, and you could talk to him, and he could, you know, tell you stories, and you could also, kids love helping, you know, so it's really fun for kids to help instead of a lot of people nowadays think, don't ask the kids to help out with chores or things you need to get done because, you know, they don't want to do it. So they just kind of baby them. But I think kids do enjoy helping, you know, so it's always nice to, it's nice that you had that. Do you live in the city now or where do you live now?
Now I live actually in the city. So now I'm from my work. I can basically live wherever I want to live. But my girlfriend is working in the city. So I live wherever my girlfriend is living currently.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. You don't want to have to drive an hour to go see her. I want to find out about how you went to Abu Dhabi and all those places. Were those Bitcoin related trips?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, like those places that I counted was all Bitcoin conferences. I've been to many more places because my parents always brought us to holidays. Actually, almost every year. But those things that I counted, so El Salvador, Abu Dhabi, Miami, Vegas soon, Prague, these are all places I went because of Bitcoin conferences. This was really cool to see the world and go to the Bitcoin conferences and then extend the stay a little bit longer and see the city, see the environment. I also encourage every American, if they want to see Europe, like just come to Bitcoin Prague. You've seen amazing Bitcoiners there. And then you extend your stay for like 5 days and you can roam around the whole of Europe. Like Europe is very small. You can be in Austria, Germany, Czech, all those, France, all those great places.
You could take a train, you know, everywhere,
just
right?
Just train and drive. Like it's so easy in Europe. So I like to do that, come there earlier or stay a little bit longer in Bitcoin conferences and see the nature, see a little bit of the what's going on outside of Bitcoin in that city.
Yeah, you might as well if you're there, right? You're not going to just go for your 3-day conference and just jump out, you know, at least enjoy your trip and make it a fun time and explore. So can you tell us something about yourself that is surprising, something that you like as a hobby or something people don't really know about you?
Oh man, it's surprising.
what kind of interest, even if you're interested in something other than Bitcoin?
So one thing that is surprising about myself is how tall I am. People, that's literally the first thing that people tell me when they meet me in person for the first time, because most people just see me from the screen. I'm almost 2 meters. That's like, I don't know, 6'7", 6'6".
Wow,
foot,
yeah.
Six, that's I don't tall. Know, like, I don't know the exact one, but 2 meters it is. So I'm really tall and people are like, oh, like shit, like on my phone, you're so small.
That's so funny. Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that tall. I mean, you look tall, but I just wouldn't have pictured 6'6 or 6'7.
Yeah, I have to put like some disclaimer, I think, on my podcast.
Really tall guy.
really tall guy. I like sports a lot. I swam actually. I was swimming in the on a national level in Austria, like on a really good level actually, but for Austria, not the American national level, like the no Austrian swimmer could compete with any of the American swimmers because they're really good.
But that's saying that you're better than the swimmers in your country. So that's amazing.
Oh yeah. I was in some disciplines in like the top 10, top 20 in my country. That was really, really cool. And this is like one interest, but it's actually, it's getting harder and harder to come up with interests outside of Bitcoin because my life is just so evolved around Bitcoin. It's also funny because on my podcast, I asked this question, okay, what can we learn from you besides Bitcoin? And I asked that every single guest, and most of the guests are like, wait, okay, besides Bitcoin, like what is there besides Bitcoin? And it's clearly because Bitcoin is such a major fork in the road of humanity. Obviously, we want to spend all our time and energy there. But I think it's important to also find interests outside of Bitcoin. I think the biggest interest I currently have outside of Bitcoin is chess.
Nice.
I love chess. I'm not the best in it, but I do love it a lot. It's tactical. I can play it on my phone. I can play it wherever I am. I can play it offline. I can play it with other friends. In El Salvador, on the conference, there was actually a section with chess boards, and I loved it so much because I was just there and could play chess with Bitcoiners. It was literally my two worlds colliding. Something someone asked me, if you don't want to talk about Bitcoin and you're retired, what would you talk about? I would probably make up a chess account on YouTube and just play chess on a live stream every day and just talk.
That's amazing. Yeah, I love to. Thank you for sharing that. And also, it reminds me of a time where I don't watch a ton of TV, but me and my husband like to watch some shows together, and we watched The Queen's Gambit. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but it is a show about chess and it is incredible. I was obsessed with chess for a while. Just she was such a great actress, and it's such a great show. So if you love chess, you might want to watch that.
I saw that on Netflix. I'm always trying to stay away from shows that are really popular.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying it's a nice show.
Amazing. Yeah, I would definitely watch that when you have some downtime. And since you love chess, it's great. I didn't even know much about chess, and I loved it. Like, I started to get an app on my phone that I was trying to play chess because I've never actually played before. But now talking about it makes me want to get into chess a little more too. So that would be fun. But I would recommend it.
If you're in chess, let me know. We can play an online game. I would love to challenge you.
That's awesome. Yeah, I have to learn a little more. I mean, I know a little bit of the rules, but I have to get a little more familiar, but that would definitely be fun.
Let's do a second round on your podcast in 1 year, and then let's do like an 1 hour chess game where we talk about Bitcoin and play chess next to it.
Yes, that would be so cool. I would love that. Yeah, because you could just be, because I used to do that too. I used to play more like video games. I was kind of a gamer, I guess, in 2020. And that was something me and my husband found to do together when we couldn't go a lot of places. But we just, the reason we loved playing also was we would play with other friends, and you'd be just chatting about whatever's going on. I would talk about Bitcoin with everybody, you know, I would just kind of tell them what I'm learning as we're playing this video game. So I love that idea. I think that's so fun.
Absolutely. I'm down for it.
Yeah. So I want to know how you got into, you know, Bitcoin, like specifically, but. And then I want to know how you got into, what made you decide to start a podcast? And but first, what was your journey into Bitcoin like?
So I'd already told you, like, I was always a very saving person. So when I got into Bitcoin, I like, most people go in Bitcoin and they learn something from that. And most people learn savings. And I already had that. I remember being in the supermarket as a small kid in like the preschool days. And it was like one day I remember nicely. I was there, and whenever my mom gave me like 5 euros to spend on my lunch money, I put 2 euros away and saved it and only spent 3 euros. Because I know at home I have a full fridge. Like, why would I need to buy a lot of things in my lunchtime when I have a full fridge at home? So what I would do is spend only 3 euros on a small thing so I can eat a little bit. And then with the 2 euros, I just save and save it up for no reason at all. I just save it. So it was always in back of my mind, I want to save money. I want to save my financial energy. I didn't know why I was doing that back then, obviously, but it was just an intuition that I had. And one day I remember I was at the checkout of the superstore, of the supermarket, and my mom was by accident at the same supermarket because she was buying groceries for us, and she saw me that the kids got all the things, like really a lot of things, and I just bought like that one small bread, and she was feeling sorry for me, and I was like, oh, why are you not using your money? And she was like buying something for me. I just tell that because my mom really wanted to spoil me in that regard, but I still wanted to save. It was so deep in me that I wanted to save. It probably comes from my dad, but it is something that it was always in me. With that, and that's maybe important for now, with 18 years old, I first was able to invest in the stock market. So in Austria, I don't know how it is in America actually, but in Austria, you can only invest in the stock market when you're 18 years old or older. Before that, you can only invest with the parents' permission and with like a child discount and stuff like that. I never wanted to do that. So it was the first time where I could invest something. And what did I choose? And I invested in a savings account of my bank. It was literally the worst decision ever. But I did that for, I don't know, a few months, and I accumulated like 4 cents in interest payments. And I said, that's nothing. So I rather just don't do it at all. I was like doing the calculations, whatever, do it for 20 years, and nothing happens. And then I went to the next one, ETFs and all the instruments. I had it always like for half a year, for a year. And I was like, there's not a lot showing up. Like, I want to do something with that money. So I eventually came into the stock market game. I was a complete stock pro. For the first 2 years, I didn't want to make any money because I had to learn how to pick stocks. It's a skill, how to see the 10 Qs, the 10 Ks, and see, okay, what is a good management team? What is a good cash flow? Like, what are the good P ratios and stuff like that? How to pick a nice stock? I had to learn those things. And it took me about 2 years from like 18 to like 20 years old to really learn that. And then I had one and a half, 2 years where it went really great, actually. And more people, because it went great, asked me, hey, what do you think about that Bitcoin thing? And I said from the beginning, I did the stock market thing till I met Bitcoin from 2017 to 2020, it was. Bitcoin is a pyramid scheme. It's a scam. It has no cash flow. It has no value. Like, why should I buy it? So in 2020, I finally decided, hey, more and more people kept asking me about Bitcoin. I want to really prove them wrong, why Bitcoin is bad. And I want to find more arguments against Bitcoin. So I basically set out for a mission for 1 weekend. This is the weekend where I try to find arguments against Bitcoin. And this was the weekend where I found arguments for Bitcoin. So this weekend basically orange-pilled me. So on Monday, I got into a Coinbase account. On Tuesday, I got my first ledger. And from there, it was just a matter of time till I went all in. It was like 2020 where I was orange-pilled and 2021 where I basically was 100% into Bitcoin.
Wow. So yeah, that's the crazy part about when people tell you to invest in Bitcoin or to buy Bitcoin, and by trying to tell people why you shouldn't do it is how you end up deciding that it's the right thing to do. It's crazy how that works. That's how my journey was in 2020. Also, that's when I got started, and I feel the same way. Like, I thought it was interesting, but you have to do the research. You know, you have to try to disprove it. You do want to try to, you are skeptical about it, but the more you learn about it, the more you realize that all the thoughts you had about it are not what you thought. So one of the biggest pushbacks I get from people, and I remember us talking on your show about how we don't try to argue with people. We just like to let them speak and see why they don't think it's a good thing. And we just find that gap in knowledge, because then they eventually realize, or you eventually realize, that the arguments they're making, there's some sort of a lack in how much they know about it. So then you could ask, well, why do you think that? And then they start to, you know, come around. But the biggest pushback I get, they love to just bring up that it's not backed by anything. Or what does it produce? Because most resources in the world, they produce a material that's valuable, and they just don't understand that. The way I try to explain it, I don't know if you have a different way to explain it to people who say those things, but what it produces is security from theft, because the network is large and decentralized and global, and it protects the time and energy you're putting into that network that nobody can steal from. So I call it a big shield. I'm like, that's what it produces. It produces the biggest defense against theft. But I don't know if you have another way that you put it, or people, do you encounter people that say that or something else?
It's such a lazy thing to say, saying like, Bitcoin doesn't produce anything. Yeah, like, what does gold produce? And then people are like, oh, yeah, gold is used in metals and in smartphones. Yeah. How much is this? Like 5% of the value of gold? Think about how much more aluminium is used in all sorts of things. And why is aluminium so much less worth than gold? Because gold is used as a store of value. Storing value is the use case. Like, having a place where you can store your financial energy, where nobody can manipulate it, where nobody can do anything with that, and it's yours, you have the key to that place. That's the use case. And then we have the lowercase b and the uppercase b of like the Bitcoin as a store of value and the Bitcoin as the network. So the network also has some value to it, but obviously it's the biggest value is that you can store your financial energy in a savings device where you don't get inflated away, where you don't get censored, where your money is not getting stolen, where Yeah, all those arguments. So people don't say that's a use case. The fact that Bitcoin is not used for anything else than just money makes it the perfect money. We don't want money to be used in smartphones. We don't want money to be jewelry also, because jewelry should be jewelry, and things that go in smartphones, materials should be in smartphones. Money should just be money at the end of the day. And people that actively, and that's a really good point, people that actively take the decision to not buy Bitcoin, betting against Bitcoin. So if you have 0% Bitcoin allocation, you're basically saying Bitcoin is going to zero and it will fade out. Then you better have a good reason for that. If you're betting against Bitcoin and you think Bitcoin will go to zero, you should better have a really good thesis, because the last 16 years, you have been dead wrong.
100%. That is such a good point. I mean, if it's not going to zero, it's going to continue going up. That's what we say. So they have been dead wrong. So that's a really great point. I love it.
And also one thing, a lot of people don't realize that this decision is an active decision. They just make the decision of not making a decision. So they're just doing their savings in euros and in US dollars. Then they might have a small stock portfolio. Maybe they have some ETFs, or maybe they own their own home and they see their home as an investing. These all are decisions. We are not. If you don't go into Bitcoin, that's this active decision against Bitcoin. People think if you don't go in Bitcoin, I just did not make the decision, so I don't have to think about it and I don't have to research Bitcoin. But you do have to research Bitcoin, because if you're not into Bitcoin, you're betting against it. If you listen to any Bitcoiner and you think, oh, like, he's talking that Bitcoin is completely revolutionizing the whole financial space, then this is a pretty huge thing. So I should spend some time to think about, is this actually going to happen or not? So if you spend some time on that and you're educating yourself, you will come to the realization, oh yeah, that's actually happening. This is actually possible. And if you think that there's just a 3% chance that Bitcoin might actually be the next financial asset that is underlying everything, then allocate 3% of your portfolio to Bitcoin. Nothing wrong with that. It shows your conviction. I have 100% of my wealth in Bitcoin because I'm 100% certain. That might be foolish because there might be a black swan event. I don't think so, but that's my belief. That's my conviction. And if you have a 3% chance that Bitcoin might be the thing, then you put 3% in the Bitcoin and 97% of your money in whatever other system you believe in. If you think the digital euro will rule the world, then put 97% in the digital euro and 3% in Bitcoin. Right. I think I will have a better financial future with my Bitcoin bet against your digital euro bet. But it's fine. That bothers me a lot when people are just like, oh, I don't want to look into Bitcoin. I don't want to make a decision. You made a decision.
Yeah, you made a decision by ignoring it. You know, so your decision is, once you hear about Bitcoin and it crosses your mind and you've heard anybody talk about it, whether it be on a podcast or just in real life, just hearing it mentioned, the fact that you even know that such a thing as Bitcoin exists, once you find that out, you make the active decision to not care or not be interested or not learn about it. So you're right. It's like, if you don't think this thing is true, then figure out why you think that. And that's what bothers me about people who believe in gold so much and promote gold so much, because you're supposed to be the type of people in this world that educate people on finances, and you don't take the time yourself to realize that your own arguments are false.
It's 100%. There are certain innovations in the human history that changed civilization forever. And I call them the fork in the road invention. I don't have a better name for that right now. Bitcoiners really encouraged me to look at history. And this is what I basically right now do when I don't have a podcast and when I don't research Bitcoin. Now and now research history. So I've looked into the printing press, the steam engine, electricity, the electronic telegraph with communicating, all those innovations in the past that have been made from Samuel Morse, from James Watt, from all those innovators that changed how we think about the world, that changed how we interacted with the world. And we can now really dive deep into the different invention, but probably would be a very long one. But let's say like the printing press. Before, the information was controlled by churches. The information was controlled by a small elite group of people that had the manpower to actually write the books. One book took a few months or sometimes a year, depending on how big the book is, to make. When Johannes Gutenberg came and invented the printing press with the movable metal type, with the oil-based ink, and with those with the wine presses, with the screw press, he basically made it possible for everyone to print books. So if you look before Johannes Gutenberg, we have one book in like few months or like sometimes even over a year. Then Johannes Gutenberg came in his first 5 years of the invention, he managed to print 180 books. It's a lot more because he was just one person. But then look out for 50 years later. So in the first 5 years, he managed to print 180 books. Then in the next 45 years, there were another 50 million books. And this was just Europe. So imagining what happens if the right innovation comes into the conversation. We don't even know how much civilization and the human civilization will change just because we have a better money. And money is so fundamental. This book thing was very fundamental because it unlocked information. Now all of a sudden you can, and we can go really deep, but there's like with Martin Luther King, who has used it, and many others who used that technology, like to spread messages and stuff like that. There were so many bookshops, like it was all of a sudden affordable for people to produce books. There was all of the sudden people started learning to read. Before that, not a lot of people could read because there are not that many books around. Why should you read? So there's all those things coming from an innovation that we don't even know about. So if you just give that a 5-10% chance of Bitcoin being one of them, don't you think it's fair to like read one book about it?
Yeah, coming from somebody who, as a child, you know, you saved 2 out of your 3, you know, I don't want to say dollars, what currency was it?
Euros, but yeah, euros. It's almost the same.
Okay, you saved 2 out of your 3 euros as a child. You know, you were into saving as a kid. You always had that habit. You always wanted to save money. So coming from somebody like that, you're not somebody who, as a kid, you spent all your money, you always wanted more, you're always trying to look to gain more. You're not the type who gambles, you're the type who saves. So your personality, the type of person you are, you're not gambling when you get Bitcoin. You're gambling when you don't get Bitcoin. So you are actually doing the right thing because you took the time to find the best way to save your money because you, as a kid, that was your goal and you still have that goal. And you, so it's not coming from somebody who you're thinking is risky with their money. You know, your opinion is from someone who, as a child, and there aren't too many children who think that way, you know, so you've always had this and you're not the type of person who gambles. So I think a lot of people, you know, don't understand that. They think that Bitcoiners are taking that risk, but Bitcoiners are actually seeing that this is the best savings tool. So yeah, that's a really good point to, you know, speak on your behavior, always how you've been and what kind of person they're listening to give them this advice. It's not somebody who is reckless. So when you decided to start your own podcast, what made you decide to do that? How did your family feel? Like, do you work other than Bitcoin, or do you do podcasting full time now?
This was probably the hardest decision I've ever taken in my whole life to do full time before Bitcoin podcast. So I doing Bitcoin podcasting full time since 1 year and 2 months now. So 1 year and 2 months I'm into Bitcoin podcasting full time. Before that, I did 6 years in a company where I liked the people, I liked what we did. I moved from being a software tester to being a software engineer to being involved in a managed service to being one of the key account managers there to being basically right next to the CEO and driving around with him through the whole country. So I had a rather successful career up until my young age already in the fiat industry, in the IT security industry. But I always had that Bitcoin thing in my mind, and I started that side hustle of a Bitcoin podcast, and it was so cool, and it was so different, and I liked it so much, but it didn't pay anything.
How long were you doing it part-time before you went full-time?
I was doing it not that long. So I started beginning, so let's say 2024 in March was the day, the 1st of March, where I went full time into podcasting. 2023, in the beginning of 2023, I started with full time, not part time, doing Twitter. So I grew my Twitter in 2023 from 0 to, like, let's say 7,000 followers in 1 year. And then at
Amazing.
the end of 2023, so like November, I started the podcast. So I did the podcast part time for 4 months. But the Twitter phase was very important because there I built up the connections. So that's what allowed me to have people like Jeff Booth or like other people that are really big quite early on the podcast. So I the podcast I worked on 4 months, but the Twitter phase where I put out 5 to 12 tweets per day, every single day, whole of 2024. I had an average of 55 tweets for all of 2023 because I put so much content out there. I just wanted to make it work. So this was the time where I made this work next to working full time or part time. So I worked as some period of the time full time in my job, and then to the end I already just worked part time, so it allowed me to do more of the podcasting while still paying my bills. And then I made that decision, and I was so scared. I don't know. Imagine you're like 25 years old. You're young, but still you already have like 6 years in a company that you invested so much emotional capital, but also so much time. And you feel good. Like there's nothing driving me away from the company. The boss was really cool. My people, my employees, or like not my employees, but like my coworkers were really cool. So everything was fitting nicely. But I had a few moments where I realized, oh shit, like I have to do this. And the two things were basically Jeff Booth and how's he called? Jim Carrey. Jeff Booth basically said after the podcast to me, oh, I realized, no, he actually said it on the podcast. It's on the first episode. He said, he told the story how he worked still completely in fiat, but had all his money in Bitcoin. One day he woke up and said, like, all my time is in fiat. Like, what am I doing? Where then ego death capital and all those things from like Jeff Booth's story, probably a lot of people are aware. And now he's full into Bitcoin. So he realized that he not only wants to be with his money in Bitcoin, but also with his time. And then I randomly saw a speech of Jim Carrey, where he said one sentence that just stuck with me, and he made an amazing speech. I can only recommend people seeing that speech. I think like Jim Carrey's speech, some university he was, you probably will find it. And he said one sentence in there. He's like, he told about his dad, how his dad was an accountant, and he was always making the conservative, safe choice. And then one day they let him go and his family struggled. And Jim Carrey said, I learned from that, that if you take the conservative choice, if you take the safe choice, you can also fail. So because you can fail at something that you don't like, you might as well just take the chance to do something that you like. So those two things and a lot of other small things kind of made me realize I have to try it. If I don't try it, then what I'm doing, if I never take the step and never take the chance to really get out, then I will regret that my whole life, because it was really calling. And then the Bitcoin thing came in, because I don't want to be dependent on my parents or anything like that. I don't want to fall back to anything like that. I want to pay my own rent. I want to pay for my own food. I want to be self-sufficient. And I had a Bitcoin stack that I saved up all my life until 26. I was a very saving personality. All my life, every month, I saved more than I put out. So I had a stack where I was like, okay, I could live from that some months. I don't know. Difficult to to say exactly how many months I could live from that, but I could live at least a little bit from that. So as long as I can live from that, be it half a year, be it 2 years, I will make it work. And from that moment onwards, I just said, hey, I have to do it. And then there was no going back. I quit at the company. It was really emotional, really hard for me. And I made it work. And luckily, I never had to spend a single Satoshi from my stack, because there was always some Bitcoin company that was willing to support me, willing to support my mission. And this is basically my story.
So when you first started your full-time journey, and you said that the Bitcoin company supported your journey to go full-time, so was it more, because I know that people can get monetized on YouTube and make this like join the Bitcoin world, like put your time into Bitcoin, educate people, talk with Bitcoiners, and move on from you know, from the position you were in before and actually do something you're enjoying. So did you feel that you got monetized from YouTube first, or was it support from companies like people that sponsor you? So you would share, you know, their product, like which one came first?
Product actually came first. I had, when I quit my job, on the day where I quit my job, I still had under 1,000 followers on YouTube. and I still had like maximum 1,000 people that listening to my podcast. So the podcast was nowhere near where it is now, and it was nowhere near to be profitable. But companies saw a vision, companies saw something that could be there, and they supported me, and I'm super thankful for them. I will be forever thankful for especially for the first few companies. Now it obviously now there are more companies interested in sponsoring my podcast than I am willing to have as sponsors, because I don't want to have like a 10-minute advertisement break. So now it flips a little bit, where I support the companies. But in the beginning, I'm so grateful for the companies that supported me and said like, hey, we think you have a great future. We think you have a great podcast, and I think this could be really great, and we would love to help you out and support you in any way we can.
So did they reach out to you, or did you go looking for them?
The first one, I reached out, because I literally just started my podcast when I reached out to them. We got into talks in January. This was the first one. It was the Bitcoin Exchange, 21 Bitcoin in Austria. They're in America, probably nobody knows them because they literally have no service there. So they were the first one to support me. And this helped out a lot. All the other sponsors came from themselves, actually. So every single other sponsor that I have now, because they no longer support me, every single other sponsor came from themselves to me. And this is, I thought about maybe reaching out to sponsors, but I was also like, why should I do it if they anyways come from themselves? Yeah. So I will just do the best podcast possible. And the people that want to partner up with me, they will find me. And then the partnership also starts at a better foot. If they already found me, if they really want to sponsor me, if they really want to reach out to me, then there's always like an equal thing. If I'm coming in like, oh, please give me money, it might not be the best start of a relationship also.
Right. That is very inspiring. That's inspiring to me starting my new channel. And, you know, again, I've been doing it probably for, I don't know, over a month now, 2 months maybe. But not just me, but there's other people that want to start podcasts. And we always encourage new people to start because everybody can reach a different person that maybe somebody else can't reach. And it just spreads the message and teaches people who just maybe have heard the word Bitcoin and, you know, they might come across your video or my video and actually be interested enough to learn about it because they see something they come across. So it's important to get us out there and hear from real people, you know, hear from large accounts too that have so much knowledge and experience, but also from everyday people, because a lot of people are everyday people that we're trying to get them to understand the shift here that's happening, and we want them to be exposed, you know, to it so they could actually begin their journey or understand. So that is very inspiring. So thank you for sharing that. And I love to hear about people that have had Jeff Booth on early on, because he is such a, you know, again, not egoistic. He's got Ego Death Capital. That's his company, but he will join people when they're early on and, you know, inspires people to take that full journey. So I'm excited because I'm going to be talking with him at the end of the month. And I feel like it makes me a lot more comfortable thinking that he's so down to earth. What stage of podcasting were you in when you spoke to Michael Saylor? Because how was that?
It's so interesting because I was not expecting that at all. I had a Twitter account and I had my podcast, and one day I saw that message pop up in my Twitter notification list. Michael Saylor is following you. And I was not even a little bit excited because I just thought it's a scam. I had 500 different Michael Saylors following me before, and it was always like a scam artist, a impersonator, as a bot. Or I was like, oh, but there's a blue check mark. I was like, oh, is this a bot with a blue check mark? Oh wait, he also has a lot of followers. I'm like, oh, like almost all of my people that I follow also follow him. And I checked it out and I was like, okay, the handle also seems good. I was so skeptical at first.
Yeah.
Was like, is he really the? And then I was like, oh, that's actually Michael Saylor following me on Twitter. And I had no clue. Like, I still don't know actually why he did that. Never asked him. And in like an instant, I made a tweet of screenshotting that he follows me and said like, oh, thank you so much, sir. You're an inspiration. He was actually, because I was a stock pro before, he, Anthony Pompliano and Saifedean Ammous are the three people that Orange built me, basically. I didn't had any Bitcoin in my personal environment. So I was the first Bitcoiner in my family. So those three people Orange built me, and I basically told him, oh, thank you so much. You Orange built me. You made me realize that I should sell all my stocks and I have to go all in on Bitcoin. And I was just saying, I would love to have you as a guest on my podcast. And he said, just, yeah, I would love to talk Bitcoin. And he just responded publicly, and that's it. And then we had the podcast.
And you did it in person too.
Yeah, that was it's a whole different story, actually. That tweet was public. So all my conversation basically with Mike Saylor was public. And I said then thank you to him when he said this thing back. And I said, oh, I DM'd you. And then the co-founder and CEO of Bitcoin Prague, Bitcoin Prague is a conference with around 10,000 participants where Michael Saylor always comes to. He responded and said, hey, guys, do you want to do it in person in Bitcoin Prague? And I was like, I would love to. Then I emailed the assistant of Michael Saylor if he would also like to do it in person, because I of course like to do it in person, but it also has to fit his schedule because he's the busy man. So we did it. I asked her and she said, yeah, let's do it. Then it got all arranged that he, because he has a lot to do when he's at Bitcoin Prague with the talks and the podcast and stuff like that. Then we arranged that and then we did a podcast in person in Prague. And I was just the lucky guy sitting there and having the honor of sitting next to Michael Saylor and asking him questions. I'm still blown away that he did that. And then later he actually also invited me to his 100K party in Miami, which I was even more surprised that he invites me because, yeah, okay, he comes on the podcast, but he's on many podcasts actually. So I was like, he doesn't even think about me. I thought like, and actually the invitation came so late. I thought no way I'm gonna be invited. And the invitation basically came on 16th of December, something like that, like really, really close to the event. The event was on the 31st of November, December. And yeah, then I completely dismissed all my previous holiday plans for New Year's Eve and canceled all of that and said, let's go to Miami.
God, that's what a dream come true. You know, I want to ask you about how the party was and everything too, but like, oh my gosh, did you feel nervous talking to him or did you feel like, okay, I'm going to put that aside and just be myself and just do what I got to do and just like, don't think about it too much. Like, were you?
I was a nervous wreck. It's like people told me that you don't see it in the interview, but I was super nervous. Like, my blood pressure was probably a constant, like 200 to 100, something like that. Like, I was like, my heart rate probably looked like I was running a marathon at that point. Yeah. But I was sweating. super nervous, super sweating. Yeah, it was. And it was so, like, it was the whole day at a conference. It was like at 4:30 p.m. in the evening. And I already had almost no voice because I talked the whole day at the conference. And I was like, oh, shit, now I have to talk with Michael Saylor and my voice is missing. It's just not there anymore. But it was good in the end of the day because, like, he did most of the talking anyways. I could sit back. And after, like, 20, 30 minutes, you get in the rhythm. So I did like 1.5 hours with him. And after so around 20 minutes, you realize, oh, I'm here. It's okay. He's talking really good. I have 500 different questions where I can go towards. There's like nowhere a point where I don't know what to ask anymore. So there's always something that comes up and you get a little bit more calm. It also helped that the people from Treasure helped me a lot. The Bitcoin Prague, Treasure made 2 weeks prior to that a new podcasting studio. And they were super professional. There were literally four people behind the cameras and the audio that were looking at everything while we were doing it. So I had a really good feeling. I did not have to worry about the technical things. I did not have to worry about any of those. Treasure is awesome that they helped me there. Bitcoin Prague co-founder Matthias is awesome that he arranged that whole thing. Without him, it would not have been even, I wouldn't have even the idea to that. And then obviously Michael Saylor, I had a YouTube account with 2,000 subscribers. I was not big. I was also just starting out. I had some growth, but I was just starting out. I'm still not big. I would still consider me a smaller podcast. But yeah, he came on, and it means a lot to me that people like Jeff Booth and Michael Saylor, they give people chances. Like that is something so unique. Obviously, obviously it's good also for him. Like he also gets something. Like Jeff Booth gets something if he's on the podcast. Like Mike, they're not doing it for nothing, but he could do a lot of other things. He's a highly, 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 highly paid CEO. The same with Jeff Booth. Like he's really successful. Jeff Booth also financially. He could spend time with his family. He could do whatever he wants to do. He could be on a yacht and just enjoy his life. But he chose from his valuable time to sit down with me 1.5 hours. Who am I? Who am I to deserve that? So that's Jeff Booth was the first one, and Michael Saylor was the second one, where I really had that moment of like, oh, he's on my podcast? Like, how did that happen?
Wow. Yeah, that's obviously he saw something in you. Obviously, he wouldn't go on your show if he thought you were not, you know, something that could be, you know, growing in the future. You want to spend time with people that you think are worthy, you know, to at least share the word, you know, at least you're doing it. You know, if you didn't show that you were committed, you know, he was just going to go on someone's show that would disappear tomorrow, you know, but I think that seeing that you are committed to what you want to do, you enjoy, you're passionate about it. And, you know, he wanted to spend time with you because of that. The same reason that you chose to leave your job and go full time is because you have this passion. So I think passion sees passion. So he wanted to join you for that reason. And congratulations for doing both of those. That's amazing. And for doing what you did to join the Bitcoin world full time, and everything just kind of came to you. So that's amazing. And now you're speaking at the conferences. You're speaking in Prague. You're flying all over to different conferences. You're going to be in Vegas this May. So I'm super excited because I'll get to see you speak.
I want to show you something. This here is me at the Bitcoin Prague event. This was Bitcoin Prague 2023. And at that time, I had no podcast. I had like a few thousand followers maybe on Twitter, but nobody knew me. I did not have made any connections. I went through the whole conference and nobody recognized me. Nobody knew who I am. And I was just a huge fanboy of Michael Saylor and Cipher Dynamos. I wanted to have a picture with Michael Saylor all of the conference. Like the whole conference, I was like searching for him. Like, where is he? I want to have a picture with this man. I want to shake his hand. I want to have a picture with him. This was 2023. And at the end of the conference, I finally saw him. I was like, yeah, he's at the Cipher Dynamos booth. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I can have now a picture of Michael Saylor and Cipher Dyn. I was not running, but I was going very fast towards him, so fast that the bodyguard of Michael Saylor actually came in between me and really looked at me because he thought like, oh shit, like a 2 meter long guy is all of a sudden coming steaming towards Michael Saylor.
That's so crazy. Yeah,
I slowed down when I saw him, but he probably would have taken me out if I didn't slow down. And I just interrupted then and very egotistically I said, oh, I would love to just take a picture with the both of you because I'm the hugest fans and you both basically orange-pilled me in 2020. And they said, yeah, of course, come in. And it's just so amazing because this was 2023 in June. Nobody knew me. I was a huge fanboy. I had no connections, no money, nothing in Bitcoin. And then 1 year later, I interview Michael Saylor on the same conference. It's literally 1 year later. And 1.5 years later, I was invited to Michael Saylor's private 100K party. And now, 2 years later to that image, so another half year later to that, I'm on stage on Bitcoin Prague.
People that use fiat currency is a store of value. We call them core. We call them core.
Probably even on the main stage, but it's not fixed yet what I'm speaking about and with whom I'm speaking about. So it's just, I think if anyone can take anything away from it, you can do whatever you want in the Bitcoin community because people are actually very nice. I've never rejected any podcast invitation because I love Jeff Booth and he set an example for me. I take Jeff Booth as a role model. And if Jeff Booth is good enough for every podcast that invites him, basically, then who am I to decline anyone? Who am I to say, like, I don't have time for that? And so I try to help anyone out and try to do whatever in my small power I can do. And I think that's kind of the message of, like, you can do whatever you want in Bitcoin if you really put in the proof of work and really try to do something. And I just wanted to show that picture.
I love it. Thank you so much for sharing it. You did that for me because I didn't have a podcast when I got on your show. I thought the same way. Who would even want to speak to me? I'm not a finance person. I'm not a tech person. I'm not somebody who, you know, I didn't think people would want to hear from me. And you having me on meant so much to me because I've been watching your channel for a very long time. I think you're a great interviewer and I look up to you, you know, so for me to be on your show, I was feeling that way about being on yours because I'm like, I know him, you know, I've been watching him. He's, you know, I can't believe I'm going to be talking on his show. This is insane. So I felt very nervous, you know, before I spoke on yours and you made me feel so comfortable and you are so humble just like they are. So it's like whatever they did for you, you're doing for other people. And that's the power of this community. And to show where you went, like how you made that active decision to go full time and how supportive this community is for your journey and what you're doing, it made me feel lightheaded. Like when you're telling the story, like I actually feel like how powerful, like that powerful feeling of this support, you know, is overwhelming. It can be overwhelming and you don't get that a lot of places. So, you know, sharing that story is incredible. Sharing that picture really puts it into, you know, you actually get to see that was you before you even started your own podcast, you know, when you were just there, you know, trying excited to get a picture. How was the actual party when you went?
Well, that was awesome. I went there. There was an option to take a plus one. So I took my girlfriend with me and it was just so awesome. And a lot of people said to me previous to the party of like, oh, there's such an amazing networking community and you can use it as an opportunity. And I said like, no, this is a celebration. I work now 2 years as hard as possible to do something in the Bitcoin community, to provide value for the community. This is my payoff. This is my personal payoff for the hard work. And I will just relax, enjoy the party and talk with whoever I want to talk and have a good time. And that's what I did. I came there and I went into every room. He also is like most of the party was outside outside in his garden and outside in on his yard, but he also opened some rooms inside of the house where you can actually maybe I've seen that, but a lot of different things. I've seen the round thing, the big one, and just the inside of the house is it's more beautiful than most museums, honestly. it's just amazing to see that house and what amazing cool things he has. He has the second computer. I don't know if he has it in his house or he just put it there for the party. I mean, maybe it was just quickly there for the party, but there was the second computer that ever was connected to the Bitcoin network. And that was like we have that computer, like that, yeah. Seeing that like historical piece was really cool. And then I just roamed around the party and enjoyed it and had a good time. I was eating and drinking and just enjoyed the time with my girlfriend. And
did people recognize you?
Yeah, obviously, like a lot of people were also on my podcast already. Like I knew a lot of people. It was a really a cool Bitcoiner party. So I knew a lot of people there and a lot of people.
It was like your friends. Like you just had a party with your friends.
And this is the crazy part. 1.5 years ago, when the picture that I showed you, nobody knew me. I knew nobody. And with a lot of hard work for 1.5 years, you get to know people, and all of a sudden, it's not what a party at Michael Saylor. It's like, oh, I'm meeting friends there. I'm meeting people that I seriously consider friends there. I mean, obviously, a lot of people I also didn't know there because there are also like a lot of MicroStrategy people there. It was not just Bitcoiners, but it was really cool to be there, and the food was amazing. Like, just imagine an awesome party and make it 10 times better, and this was basically the party. So like the food was awesome and everything was amazing.
It's like you're just at a party with your peers. You're not going to some party where you're thinking, oh, like sometimes when you go to a wedding and you think the bride or groom invited me, I'm friends with them and I don't know anybody else there. And you're going to go there just with your girlfriend and be walking around and be like, okay, nobody knows us except for the bride and groom and they're busy. So we're just kind of hanging out, trying to make small talk with people we don't know. But here you're going and you 1.5 years later know people. Like you're going to a party where you're meeting your peers. It's not just strangers. That you're just kind of like showing up feeling uncomfortable, you know, you actually feel like you belong, which is so incredible. And your story is amazing. Like you have such a great journey and so much more, you know, coming up. You know, you're a pioneer, you know, you are going from thinking, who are these people to like, who am I for them to talk to me? To now being a leader in the space, to be talking on stage, starting in Prague and then, you know, going to other conferences all over the world, but now in Vegas, and I get to see you in Vegas. So that'll be fun. And I get to see how tall you are again. Now I have at least, I won't be as shocked because I saw that picture.
I don't have security, so.
Yeah. I'll probably try to walk toward you quickly and I'll fall on something because I'm really clumsy. So you'll see me just kind of face plant. You know, so that's probably going to be my scenario. I'm sure of it. So there's a couple of things. Oh my gosh. Like, I feel like I'm blown away. I don't even know what to say right now. It's like, where do I go from that? That's,
I just wanted to say, also thank you so much because it was a huge compliment and I appreciate that a lot. Sometimes you're so into the work that you kind of don't know how far you have already come, and then conversations like that actually make me realize, it's not just a daily work. It's like there's actually like a progress over long, because if you are really into the daily work and you're just like working every day of like, oh, what title do I put there and which guest the next, like you get so close minded in that one day sphere that you miss the bigger picture. So I appreciate that a lot because it just takes me back to the moment of like 2 years ago of that conference. And it makes me realize how amazing this community is and how amazing the achievements can be if you put in the proof of work.
Yeah, because you thinking, you're right, you don't take that step back and you don't see it from someone's perspective, because to you it could feel like it's a long journey. It feels like it's a lot of hard work that you've enjoyed, of course, but you doing this every day, you know, grinding for, again, a great purpose and for something you love to do, but you're doing it because you enjoy it, but you're not taking that step away to see the way that you look at yourself is different from how other people look at you. And it's nice to hear from other people that even though you feel like, okay, I'm putting in the work, I'm enjoying what I do from my side, but seeing how people view you is another situation. You know, it's nice to hear because you are the one working hard. You should be able to hear, you know, it gives you energy. It gives you like power, like you feel stronger, you know, when you hear the truth. You know, people should tell each other, you know, what it means to them. It's great that you took that step back and it's great that you can see how far you've come. And it is an incredible story. I mean, it's really, to make me feel lightheaded thinking about how fast that was. You know, that's 2 years, but it's a quick, you know, complete transformation of, it's a big risk that you took too, but you just are so passionate about it that to think I've studied all these years to go to school for this one thing, I know so much about it, I'm just going to quit that altogether. I mean, I'm sure you figured you could always go back if this doesn't work out. You know, you could do something in that field of work. It's not like you can't. But just to take that step and have the bravery to go forward and try something and not feel afraid to try new things is really inspiring for people. That's like a fairy tale, you know, story. And honestly, I'm trying to remember when I first started watching your show, because I got into it in 2020. And I feel like when I started watching your show, I know it wasn't that. It wasn't in 2020 because you started in 2023, right? So, but when I first came across one of your podcasts, it came up like on my feed, or maybe I saw you on Twitter first. I'm not sure how I came across, but you sounded like you'd been doing it forever. You know, it didn't sound like you just started. You're very comfortable, and you make your guests feel very comfortable.
Thank you so much.
Definitely, we should meet up out there. That'd be awesome. You know, I'd love to hang out in real life. You know, it's so easy to talk to you and everything. And thank you so much for joining me. This is also a dream come true for me, because just having somebody like you on my show, just even the 2 month journey I've been on compared to your 2 year journey, how much can change when you just make a decision, you know, a conscious decision to do something like learning about Bitcoin, you know, instead of just sitting on the sidelines. So thank you so much again for joining me today. I had the most amazing conversation. I can't wait to share it, and I look forward to it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Robin. Have a good rest of the day. And I'll see you in Vegas.
I'll definitely see you in Vegas. It will be awesome.
Awesome. Take care. Have a good one.